I shall never forget the day when it was when I was working in the previous church to this one, so it involves nobody here. I was confronted in my office one morning by a man who was obviously greatly distressed. He was in tears. And it quickly transpired as he sat down and began to talk the reason for it all. He had come back from a business trip a little earlier than he expected, and he had come back to find that his wife was no longer willing to be his wife. She was having an affair. He didn't know anything about it. But she had decided that it was the end. She wanted the other man. And she was putting strong pressure on him to get out of the house. He just didn't know which way to turn. He was in absolute desolation. That picture of that man came back to my mind as I was reading again this letter to the church in Laodicea that we just read, and particularly the text, which is our text tonight. This is it. Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will go in and eat with him, and he with me. It's an extraordinary picture, you see. Maybe if you've visited St. Paul's Cathedral, you've seen Holman Hunt's painting depicting this scene of Jesus knocking on a closed door. It's an extraordinary picture because, you see, in a way, it's the picture of a husband who has been locked outside his own home. His wife no longer willing to have him inside. Yet still he stands there and he knocks. She seems deaf to his words, to his feelings. He pleads with her to open the door, but it seems she's oblivious to him. She has no interest in opening that door. Yet still, in spite of all the hurt he is feeling, all the anger he is repressing, he goes on standing at that door and knocks. "Here I am," he says. "I stand at the door and knock." What is that door? Some people say it's the door of the future. Jesus is just waiting to burst through the heavens, open the door, as it were, and bring us all to judgment. But I think it's a rather unlikely interpretation because we can hardly open that door, can we? Other people say it's the door of the human heart, which is probably nearer it. But the interesting thing, of course, if you read the verse in the context of the whole letter that we just read, is this. That verse wasn't spoken to an individual. It was spoken to a church. So the most likely interpretation of what that door is that it's the church door. The church, the bride of Christ, is inside this church at Laodicea, but she's not interested in her husband anymore. He's outside. Jesus tells us in this letter that her behavior had really sickened him. He says, "Because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth." There's the words of an aggrieved husband, all right, aren't they? A church which had nauseated him. What was it about them that had made him so angry, so sick at heart? I don't think anywhere in the New Testament you will find Jesus speaks of anybody in such violent terms. "You make me sick. I am nauseated by you. I can't stomach you." What could they have done to warrant such tones of disgust? He tells us. It was their temperature. "You are neither hot nor cold," he says. "You are indifferent to me. You have no love, no fire, no passion. Your temperature is cold. You are a frigid wife," he says. "There is no passion in you, no love." How had it happened? He tells us that too. In verse 17, you say, I am rich. I have acquired wealth. Don't need a thing. You don't realize that you're wretched and pitiful and poor and blind and naked. Wealth is a dangerous thing, you know, and Laodicea had a lot of it. It was one of the very wealthy towns in Asia Minor, so wealthy that after it had been devastated by an earthquake, it built itself again out of its own funds without asking the Roman central government for a penny. Affluence just oozed from Laodicea and from the people there who belonged to the church. Always a dangerous thing. For you see, wealth has this way of anesthetizing people spiritually. Jesus said of much. He said, how hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. I suppose it's because it makes people complacent. That's certainly what had happened to the people at Laodicea. I don't need a thing, they said. They were fully satisfied, you see, with their affluent lifestyle, fully absorbed with their, well, I suppose to translate it into the 20th century, with their motor cars and their video recorders and their color television sets and their, well, whatever else the latest gadget is. They had plenty of toys to play around with, plenty of home comforts. They felt secure. I don't need a thing. Oh, don't get me wrong. I expect they went to church now and again and sanctified their materialism with suitable prayers, disinfecting the filthy lucre. But there's a note of sarcasm, isn't there, in Jesus' voice? You don't realize that you are wretched and pitiful and poor and blind and naked. This affluence of yours has blinded you to your real spiritual condition. It's completely obsessed you. And of how many Christians is that true? Of how many people is that true? That money has ruined them. That materialism has blinded them to their real spiritual condition. And so they feel no need. You meet them every day on the street. You talk to them, perhaps, about Christian things, if you get the opportunity, and you get a blank stare. They don't feel, inside, any need for all that religion business. Why don't they? Well, because when they go home, they've got a nice videotape to play. And next weekend, they're going off to the Bahamas for a couple of weeks. That's why. Jesus can do nothing for anybody if they don't feel a need. Absolutely nothing. It's like somebody going to the doctor in the morning, you know, saying, I'm perfect. I'm fully healthy, doctor. There's nothing wrong with me at all. Everything about me is fine. My muscles, my stomach, my respiration, my circulation, it's all A1. Unlike the rest of these miserable specimens in your surgery, there's nothing wrong with me. Doctor can't do anything for a man like that. Hey. Jesus actually said so. He said, those who are whole, those who are healthy, they don't need a doctor. It's the people who are sick who need doctors. So the implication was, if you're not sick, what do you need me for? Now, if we don't feel a need for Jesus, he can do nothing for us. And the trouble with these folk at Laodicea was just that. Their wealth, their materialism, blinded them to their need. I've acquired wealth, I don't need a thing. That was their attitude. And of how many in our world, I say again, is that true today? That's why the door was shut. Perhaps they hadn't realized they were doing it. You see, they were Christians, at least nominally so. It was a church, at least nominally so. Perhaps they hadn't realized how the spiritual fervor was draining out of their community. Perhaps they hadn't realized or noticed how their hearts were gradually becoming colder and colder towards their Savior. I don't know. But that's how it finished up. With Jesus pushed outside the church door. I don't know what they were doing inside. Maybe they were singing hymns. Maybe they were saying prayers. Maybe they were having raffles. bingo stalls. I don't know what they were doing inside. Perhaps they were playing church in some kind of way. Perhaps they were having a communion service. But Jesus couldn't recognize himself in the bread and the wine on their table. He was outside, feeling sick of the lot of them. And yet, he goes on knocking, feeling hurt. But he goes on knocking, feeling angry. But he goes on knocking. Maybe there's somebody here who, if they're honest, has to admit that their spiritual life isn't what it ought to be. Maybe they're not Christians at all, and they know that really and truly they should be. Or maybe they've made a commitment to Jesus Christ some time ago, but it's, as in the case of the Laodiceans, died off somehow in its passion and in its enthusiasm. They're neither hot nor cold. When Jesus says, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth, that sounds a very uncomfortable sort of verse to read. Maybe this sounds a severe passage. Maybe it makes you a little bit frightened. I am about to spit you out of my mouth. As if our lack of feeling for Christ is going to be the end for us. That's how you feel. In a way, I'm glad you feel like that, because I think that's why this passage warns us in those solemn tones. It wants to shake us out of our lukewarmness. It wants us to realize that it's no good being a mediocre Christian, a half-hearted Christian. Christ expects enthusiasm for him from us. He expects us to be extremists for him, hot or cold. He won't stand lukewarmness. And yet, I don't want you to be discouraged by that passage. Because, you see, he's standing at the door and knocking. He's not given up on these Laodiceans, and I don't think he's given up on you, has he? He's still knocking. That's why this is a beautiful verse to me. Most husbands treated the way this bride had treated them would have given up long ago. But he's still at the door, knocking. Just look at the three things there are in this text for the encouragement and the challenge of us tonight, if that's our situation. First of all, there's the willingness of Jesus. Here I am, he says. I stand at the door and knock. How does he knock, do you think? Do you think he knocks tentatively, shyly, pathetically, like some beggar who's desperate for our hospitality? No. He's not that kind of man, is he? No, his knock is authoritative, peremptory, sovereign. How dare we keep him shut out? How dare we deny him access? Yet there's something more in that knock, isn't there? Something a little unexpected, perhaps. Something even more persuasive than his kingly assertiveness. Don't you detect tenderness there? I don't know if I'm right about this. It's admittedly rather speculative, but you know, almost all the imagery that you find in the book of Revelation is drawn from the Old Testament. There's a huge number of metaphors and symbols there, but almost all of them you will find somewhere or another drawn out of the Old Testament. I search in my mind, where in the Old Testament can we find a picture of a man banging on a door? I think about it. And you know, I've come to the conclusion that really, if John was inspired in this metaphor by an Old Testament reference. There's only one that fulfills the bill. Do you know where you find it? A most unexpected place. The Song of Solomon. You know what the Song of Solomon is? It's an erotic love poem. This is how part of chapter 5 goes. I slept, but my heart was awake. Listen, my lover is knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove. I've taken off my robe. Must I put it on again? I've washed my feet. Must I soil them again? My lover has thrust his hand through the latch. My heart begins to pound for him. I arose to open for my lover. I opened for my lover, but my lover had left. He was gone. My heart had gone out to him when he spoke. I looked for him, but did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer. Think that picture could have been in the mind of John when he said, I stand at the door and knock. If it was, then that tenderness was certainly there, wasn't it? The tenderness of a lover longing for the affection of his bride, but finding her sluggish and reluctant with sleep, too lazy to get up and open. And when eventually she does, he's gone. Now Jesus longs for our affection here. Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. He longs for our devotion, and not as a tyrant demanding it with menaces, but as a suitor wooing it with love. The willingness of Jesus. Something else. The promise of Jesus. I will go in and eat with him, and he with me. Do you know, if you wanted two words to describe what the Christian experience is about, I don't think I'd use those common clichés like joy and peace and all those kinds of words that people so often throw around. I think I'd use the words that really come out of that promise there. Friendship and satisfaction. I will go in and eat with him, and he with me. So many people in this world, it seems to me, are inwardly lonely. Oh, they may have many acquaintances, but deep down inside of them, there is a barrenness. They have no one they can really share intimately with. And so many people in this world are dissatisfied, aren't they? Trying this and that, bored, frustrated, discontented. Their lives are empty. Empty of people, empty of fulfillment. Why is it so? Because the door is shut. Because the one our hearts and our lives were meant for is outside. We were meant for Jesus. We were meant for relationship with him. We were meant to find satisfaction in a friendship with him. While he is outside, of course, we are hungry for meaning, hungry for companionship. The promise of Jesus is there, isn't it? I stand at the door and knock. I will go in and eat with him, and he with me. So what is stopping it then? The condition of Jesus. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door. Not one condition then, are there, but two. If anyone hears my voice, he said. You mean we can miss his voice? Oh, yes, too true. We can miss his voice. So immersed in our self-interest, so absorbed in our self-love, so wallowing in our self-pity, maybe. Oh yes, we can miss his voice, like Narcissus. We can be entranced by the reflection of our own lives and be deaf to the voice of all other lovers. Deaf even to the voice of Christ. It's a great blessing to be able to hear the voice of Jesus. In fact, John, the writer here, he identifies that. He who has an ear, he says, let him hear. It's a great blessing to have an ear which is open to the voice of God. If when you read a verse like that, here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I'll go in and eat with him and he with me. If as you read that verse, you feel that God is speaking to you, be very grateful. For not everybody in this congregation tonight feels that. Some are bored out of their minds. Some are hoping it will all soon be over and we can get on with the coffee. And certainly if you went out into the streets and you shared that voice, that verse with people, you wouldn't find all of them by any means felt it was saying something to them. Now if you feel, as you hear that verse, inwardly, the voice of God challenging you, encouraging you, making promises to you, issuing invitation to you, and you be grateful. Well, that's not something everybody has. If anyone hears my voice. But hearing alone isn't enough, is it? If anyone hears my voice and opens the door. So an initiative is needed. An initiative on our part. See, so often we complain about the shut door. We say, oh, if only I had your faith, Pastor. The trouble is we are sitting in our pews thinking something is going to happen to us. We're thinking and waiting for some great emotional or spiritual deluge to descend upon us, perhaps, so that we will know we are Christians. Why should it be like that? The door is shut. If you hear his voice, you may open it. You may open it. Open the door, he says, and I will go in. See, so often, becoming a Christian is a bit like getting married. At least that's the way it always seems to me. You know, you see this girl, and you get a bit interested, and you start going out, and, well, things get a bit more serious. Begin to fear a bit about what it might be all leading to. Get a bit nervous about it. Then you begin to realize that your fate is really sealed. Much as in some ways you would like to find a way out, in all honesty, you can't. You've fallen in love. So you have to pick the day, don't you? The day when you go up the aisle and you say, I will. Some people, real Romeo types, you know, it's love at first sight, isn't it? They'd go up the aisle the next day after their meter. It's a real knock-you-off-your-feet job. For others of us, it's much slower than that. We think about it a lot more. Perhaps we have more to lose, I don't know. Takes us longer to make up our mind, longer to be convinced, longer before we're willing to say, I will. But whether soon or late, if we're going to be married, that moment has to come when we say, I will. An initiative is required of us. Nobody gets married by sitting around and thinking about how wonderful it would be if they were, do they? And it is exactly the same with becoming a Christian. Nobody becomes a Christian by sitting around and thinking how wonderful it must be to be one. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, he says, I will go in and eat with him, and he with me. So this patient Jesus, whom we have hurt so much, whom we have sickened so much by the half-heartedness of our spirituality, he knocks on our church door. And here and there across the congregation, a few ears pick up. Not everybody's, perhaps. Some are thinking about what will be on the television when they get home. Some are thinking about what they're going to eat. Some are thinking about what they've got to do next week. And so on and so forth. No, not everybody hears his voice. But here and there across that church, ears pick up. And a door is opened. And a new experience of friendship and satisfaction with the Son of God begins. You ready to say, I will? Ready to open the door? Christ has appointed the way whereby we publicly say, I will. It is here, in the waters of baptism. That's the marriage ceremony. That's the way, if we would step further with him, that we must go. Let's pray together.